What you're going to hear over the next couple hours may indeed frighten you. It's the kill shot. Remote viewer, Dr. Doom, Ed Dames back with us. We're going to be talking about surviving the kill shot. There is hope. Ed's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, always a treat with Major Ed Dames. I don't know whether he's going to scare the living daylights out of me or what. He, of course, is the world's foremost remote viewing teacher. He has seminars all over the country. He's a former major in the U.S. Army, retired, decorated military intelligence officer, original member of the U.S. Army's prototype remote viewing training program. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Are you going to scare us today, Dr. Doom, or what?
Yes, I am, George.
Oh, good morning. Great. It's good to talk with you. How's everything?
It's okay. This is going to be a bad year for all of us. I'll do my thing here. 20 years, by the way. 20 years on Coast to Coast this year.
Oh, my gosh. How many appearances is that? Any idea?
I don't know. I'd have to stopped counting.
The kill shot. We're going to talk a lot about it tonight, but for people who are brand new to the program, Major, tell us about the kill shot. What is that?
A brief background. In the military, I was the operations and training officer, as you know, and some of your listeners know, for the Psi Spy, the U.S.'s psychic spy team, 30 years ago now. We started experimenting with remote viewing in terms of time and space. We found out that mind is outside of time. It can see over the horizon as well as in the past and the present. And we were especially interested in warfare. What's the intent of the enemy? For instance, right now, I'm doing deep mind probes of Kim Jong-un in Korea to see what his intent are. So these are the kinds of things we were doing to prevent technological and surprises on future battlefields. But we began to see something that was not battle-related. Well, at first we thought it was a nuclear war, but it was not. It was the sun spewing out massive coronal mass ejections, plasma, and affecting the Earth drastically. And by the way, we have not stopped studying this phenomenon or ensemble of information. We've now anecdotally, but importantly, realized that a lot of the damage that I'll talk about tonight that leads to infrastructure collapse on our planet is because the Earth's core is rapidly changing. And we've kept looking up at the sun at these damaging coronal mass ejections, but it turns out that they're damaging to a great part because the Earth's core, the magnetic field of the Earth is weakening and deteriorating. But anyway, and then scientists all of a sudden started jumping on the bandwagon and saying, we're scared. And all of a sudden they had something to be scared about. I predicted a shot across the bow in 2012, and that shot across the bow happened 2 weeks after I said it would. And it turned out to be a flare that was so massive, and we're not talking the Carrington event of
1800s. Yeah.
It took the telegraph lines out. We're talking a very, very big one. So we dodged that bullet. If it would have been directed at Earth by that particular active solar region, you can look at the scientific estimates of how many people would have died of just an infrastructure collapse alone. And infrastructure collapse, for instance, if a power grid goes out, and that's one of the things that a solar flare of this magnitude can cause and will, if that happens, then just one thing, and we'll talk about others tonight, if you're in a metropolitan area and refrigeration doesn't work, you're talking starvation within a week or so of a lot of people, because in these modern days and times, that food has to be preserved and refrigerated. If there's no electricity in cities, and the power won't come back up for 6 months to a year or more in many places, when this happens in certain places, then you're talking starvation, not to mention all the other Mad Max scenario types of things. So we feel that this is really, we're really on the cusp of this thing occurring, and I'll get into more details about that. So that's what we were looking at. And then, of course, how do you survive it, which is what we'll be talking about tonight. But the reason we found it was that we were looking at civilians in the future who were in bunkers. And in most of the places, these were the survivors. The people above ground in some places were rotting corpses. They weren't people anymore. And we began to look at zones that were in the long term, because we don't know how long the scenario will last and the long-term effects, but where were the optimal places to live? And that's what we've been studying for the past many years, 10 particularly. Where are the optimal places to survive long-term on the planet? And we put together a map, which I'll talk about momentarily, and I changed the tone of my voice because we've been hammered by people who want this map, and I've only given it out behind closed doors. But we've changed the way we're going to do things regarding that map. The survival, the optimum survival zones on Earth are shockingly few in long term. They're especially in the southern hemisphere. For instance, in Australia, there's only one zone in the entire continent up in the northeast that it represents, based upon our work, a survival zone, an optimal survival zone. And I'll qualify all that this evening.
He said, don't you?
I'm sorry?
You call these places to go your sanctuary.
Well, personal sanctuaries, and as you know, I worked yours, and
yes.
We can't talk about the location for reasons I'll discuss tonight, but I worked yours. And when I do this as an expert downloader, this is what I'm doing. Your unconscious constantly tries to protect you. It's your best friend. And its key priority, your higher mind, is to keep you alive, survival, so that you can go on and achieve some destiny or whatever the heck. But it's to keep you alive. But that little voice, that it's very difficult, as it upwells in the conscious awareness, it's very difficult to get an urgent message into conscious awareness. That's difficult to do. And if you're a remote viewer, it is not, because you can listen to an unconscious, and that's what we do. We use it as a tool. So what I do in cases of you in the last 2 days, because that's what it took to do this project for you, I'm going into your unconscious. I'm not violating the sanctity of your mind in any other way, like I do dictators or terrorists. Then I download everything in their deep mind and higher mind in terms of their intent. I'm only looking at how your unconscious perceives an optimum survival zone for you, George, based upon many, many factors, particularly your personality, your family, lots of other factors, administrative and logistical. I'll answer those questions later. But I go into your unconscious, and I look to see where George's unconscious, would say, go thee here, for optimum survival and quality of life when the power goes out wherever you are at in terms of long-term survival.
Now, how many people, Ed, though, can pick up and go to these locations if they have
not
to?
Not that many. I've had probably 600 clients in the past 7 years, and nominally 80% of them have moved. I have relocated already, but that's only 700 people. And many times, especially the elderly in cities and places like that, they cannot pick up and move. They don't have the finances, nor will they, blah, 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 to do that. And their survival zones are right where they're at. So they have to take that into consideration and prepare for those kinds of things. There's a lot of details here, and I do want to inject a sense of urgency. As I sent you a note saying that for the first time I'm going on tour this year, and it first and last time. I'm not going to do this again, and I'm going to do a crash course in remote viewing for people who want to find their sanctuaries, and then that's it. Because sanctuary locations are few and far between in the generalized locations.
Now, when you say that's it, are you implying we're going to get hit soon and that's it, or you're just not going to do it anymore?
I'm implying both. I think that we're so close to, I believe, personally, my personal beliefs based upon my own work, is 2016, there's no sense for Dr. Doom to be out there on the road talking kill shot past 2016. So I'm not going to do it. It's a crash course. I used to give these familiarization courses to VIPs and corporate executives. One day, courses, but this time we're gonna do it and then talk about how to use remote viewing to find your own personal sanctuary, which is different than just the general zones on the remote viewing map that we're going to start providing to people via mail for a while. And in that map, you'll see worldwide, globally, all the optimal survival zones and where you do not want to be, which is in red on most of the map, and that's a lot of places, And it isn't just because of power grids going down and infrastructure collapse. It's not just that. It's also the zones that we're looking at. For instance, a little background, British Columbia. British Columbia met all of the criteria, evidently, for lots of places in British Columbia. They had, with the power was down, no problem. They had a lot of fish, a lot of communities that were, and you can't, a bunker mentality is not going to cut it for you, because you're going to run out of ammo. If you have an abscessed tooth, that will kill you or your loved ones. You need communities of about anywhere from 10 to 20,000 people with a lot of skill sets that can be traded and bartered. And that's key. You're not going to survive in a cabin. A few people can, but most of us can't. We need people need people. So a lot of these optimum areas are small towns in civilized areas. For instance, where you're going is not an anomaly, but it's not common. Your sanctuary location is near a rather large city.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Christchurch, New Zealand, it is a sanctuary area, the entire city.
Now, that's not where you're sending me, of course, for people.
No. Where your unconscious picked it, not me. I just expertly downloaded the information.
Yeah, I'm still in the States, folks, somewhere. Yeah.
But the point I'm trying to make is that you're not that far from a big city, but this particular big city is one in which people respect each other. They're fairly civilized, as you might agree.
Yes.
And is like Christchurch in many ways, where people are healthy. They grow up in a family atmosphere. There's a lot of farming communities, farmers who take care of each other, and that is key. That is key, one of the key criteria. But why British Columbia didn't, because fresh water, even if the skies are dark or high winds, fish can survive on algae for 2 years. So you have food, you have plenty of fuel and those kinds of things. What was wrong with British Columbia? Come to find out that a lot of the survival zones that looked good in the long run weren't, because of radiation. Looking over the, in this case, it wasn't looking over the horizon, because as I predicted Fukushima, and Fukushima airborne plumes will impinge upon a great part of the western Rockies, west of the Canadian Rockies, for years and years and years to come, and causing a lot of damage, genetic damage to children, the radionuclides pouring down on them. So that's in other areas that looked really good to us, Labrador, Newfoundland, it turns out that reactors that will run out of fuel and not be able to cool themselves, and you're going to have breaches, hydrogen breaches, in 5 days or 7 days. A lot of the airborne plumes from power plants around Lake Huron and the Great Lakes will end up flowing over in that direction, and then you have the same type of problem that that you have in British Columbia, sadly, in such a beautiful spot. So anyway, our time is limited tonight, but I'll answer a lot of your questions. Anybody that has questions can go to survivingthekillshot.com, which is the website we set up. You can find out about the map that we'll talk more about, and this tour that I'll be on, this one-day crash course tour, and how to find your own personal sanctuaries so you don't have to hire me to do it. And I'll keep you updated. I'm just saying, George, that there's no sense for me to do this past 2016. There isn't.
I've listened to you, Ed, and I've talked to you over the years, and I'm picking up a sense of urgency in your voice this time. I don't know if it's if there's something there that is truly scaring you, or if it's just information you need us to learn fast. But I'm picking something up. Am I right?
Yes, I'm sure that you must be psychic.
I've been called that before, or psychotic. I'm not sure.
No, I'm psychotic. It's everything. It isn't just the kill shot scenario. As I said, the core of the Earth is changing rapidly, and we're looking at that, at the linkage between the Sun and the core of the Earth changing. Earth's magnetic field is weakening, which means that even minor X-class flares are going to do a lot of damage to people. I'm not talking about just increased cancer rates, which are true, but a lot of other damage. Easily, because the magnetosphere is our protection. The shields are going down or weakening. So that's happening rapidly. And we have only been looking up at the Sun, not in at the core of the Earth. A lot of the sounds, the booms, and other noises that people hear in the sky worldwide, they're looking up, but it's actually being produced tectonically by geological effects that have an artifact of sonically in the air. So that's what people are hearing. That's how fast. That's representative of how fast, how rapidly the Earth's core is changing in terms of geological time, and it is changing. But the other thing that I'm worried about is martial law, and that's one of the things that disturbs me the most, George. It isn't just infrastructure collapse based upon geological events. It's martial law, and that's not going to be put off too much longer. Wait and see. And in fact, as I've said, my gut feeling is there's not going to be another presidential election. And something's out there, and I don't want...
You don't think there will be a presidential election in November, this one?
Right. I think there's something wrong. I don't want to go into detail on the air, or I won't be on the air anymore with you. But I've said this. It's been my gut feeling for years that... martial law will preclude elections and many other things.
Well,
and that's why I'm kind of discouraged. Yeah.
There are others out there who are trying to confuse the issue about the kill shot. They send out misinformation. It's all over the place. I mean, how do you fight that?
Well, one of the biggest things. I mean, I understand where there the people that are consciously corrupting information, but you know, you only hear as much as you want to hear, and people hear me say "kill shot," which is a singular event, and the consensus is all. Dames are saying that all life on Earth is over because of the kill shot, and that's what they want to hear. But that's not what I've ever said. A series, and we don't know how long the series lasts, of very powerful solar flares, like the one in 2012 that would have taken us down. That one would actually have taken most of the planet down. You can go back and look, and NASA didn't even want to mention it. It took NASA 2 years to tell us that, by the way... And they did not go public with the information. But you know who did? And you know who acted on it? The U.S. government. NORAD, everybody's moving into Cheyenne Mountain now, they say, because it's EMP protected.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, they are, too. But it's not because of a nuke EMP. It's because they know that the odds of another what happened in 2012 that I said was a shot across the bow, the odds are very high that it's going to happen again soon, and they need to be protected. In fact, our own government has come out with a plan. You can read it on the internet for all the ways in which the continuity of government will be maintained.
More to come with you, Ed, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Ed Dames with us. Ed, let's get back into some of these folks that are really trying to deceive others about the kill shot. Why are they trying to do that? What's their motivation here?
Oh, I think you have a lot of. Anytime someone becomes popular, they become a target for hate. And I'm a good one, and it rolls right off my back. And if somebody needs somebody to hate, hey, I'm right here and available. And even you, I'm sure, you and Art Bell and many other people, everybody who becomes popular, becomes a target for people that need somebody to hate. And that's all right with me.
Yeah, and the internet has helped that because they can hide anonymously and do whatever they do.
Sure, but anyway, people have a truth. People who are really coherent, their heart and mind, you know, are coherent. They have a truth switch, and I used to be in the deception business, believe it or not, in the old black world days.
Mm-hmm, the old black ops days.
Yeah, and I was involved in a lot of that stuff before I took over the Psi spy unit. And we had a sliding scale. And deception's a hard thing to do. It's a difficult thing to do. But we had a sliding scale. And it was like you have to wrap the lie in the truth, right, or the fish don't bite. So you take, it was 20% lie wrapped in 80% truth in order to try to sell that to somebody to deceive a foreign government or whatever. Well, when I got out of the military and I started to go to Hollywood and places like that, I thought, do I really want to do this? I'd love to be, you know, I still have my own intelligence agency. I need some credibility here and maintain credibility. Do I really want to go into Hollywood and write books and do these kinds of things? Then I realized that people don't know what remote viewing is. It was all black and classified and top secret. And the way to get this out there is to dramatize it. Sir Ben Kingsley played me in the movie Suspect Zero. Tom Cruise asked me to do that. I have a cameo in it. Kevin Spacey plays my role in The Men Who Stare at Goats and all these kinds of things. And the drama is there. And it struck me that, hey, I can actually get the idea across, the truth, wrap the truth in the drama, in the lie. And that truth sticks. People have a truth switch. They really say, hey, there could be something to this. And that's how I hook them, that you can learn this just like I did. You can not only find your own sanctuary, but you can find gold or missing kids. I'm out on the road. I say that in 2 days on a cold missing kid case because I like the public.
Yeah, you're still doing a lot of that, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'll never stop doing that. It's just a way of giving back for something.
Well, that's important. I was thinking about you last week. There was a story that Jordan van der Sloot, who's in jail in Peru, was recorded by a reporter who tricked him, of course, kind of boasting about the fact that the police in the Natalie Holloway investigation botched things, didn't ask him the right questions, and basically admitted that he was the one who did that. I'll always remember you saying that you believe in remote viewing, that she was put in a crate and then dumped into the ocean somewhere.
Yeah, right. What we did was we remote viewed the entire. We reconstructed her death, and my students know how to do this, and I train people in terms of queuing is what we call it, matrix search term use, how to do that. So we reconstructed that. We saw that after she was killed, after he killed her, he and somebody else stuffed her into a lobster cage and rowed out and dumped her into the water. Well, we had a pretty good fix on that lobster cage while she was still relatively intact. We need her skull. And I sent a man down to Aruba clandestinely. And he had a sled, underwater sled, a GPS, and all that, and to go look for her body underwater. And we did not work with the police because we felt that they were corrupt in Aruba. So we did all this on our own, and we didn't find her body. When we remote viewed her, we found out that most of her was way out in the sea by this time because of storms and things like that. But and I didn't want my man to land in jail either, but he had to stay underwater, and we had to launch from about 1,000 yards away just so the cops wouldn't get suspicious. But we tried our best.
Ed, let me get this breaking story in right now. Reports of two explosions at the airport in Brussels, Belgium. Police are at the airport. They say something has happened. No other information in yet. Unclear, of course. And this incident comes after a man who authorities say was involved in the Paris terror attacks last year was arrested and wounded a few days ago. So terror continues, Major. I don't know how you stop it.
I personally tracked Abd Islam after the because he was missing, and I sent all the reports to both Germany. He was in Germany for a while, apparently. I sent all the reports to the authorities in Europe, and I tracked him.
Do they get back to you, or do they respond to you at all?
The FBI does, but you have to put yourself in their place. In fact, a good example would be the director of FAA security many years ago. They were so concerned of the new generation of Semtex explosives could be molded into anything. Abu Nidal, for instance, was blowing up planes. And they called me in there, and I said, look, you guys can't talk about your relationship with me or any connection with me, too, because, you know, the taxpayers would hammer you. Just like when I, for instance, the deep mine probes that we did with Saddam Hussein before the first Desert Shield, we did that for General Motors Corporation. And, you know, their stockholders would guillotine them if they found out they were working with psychics to predict.
Oh, Mike, they just don't get it, do they?
No, and you have to honor that. Yeah, I understand it completely. It's going to be a while before Immobium is accepted as an expert tool. And until then, yeah, I accept that kind of thing.
So you do. I mean, you will accept the criticism of the skeptics who simply say, come on, remote viewing, psychics. I mean, you seem to be taking that easier than I thought you would.
Well, there's a reason for that. What I've been working on is a strategy to end run the scientific community and get a grassroots level support. And the way I'm going to do that, and I haven't told anyone either, is to find missing kids that are dead and alive again and again and repeatedly. Using specialized techniques, we call them geofix techniques. That only—it's a trade secret right now that I'm not teaching, and it's very fast and rapid. And to find a kid that the FBI cannot find—well, actually, the FBI doesn't care. These kids drop off the radar screen in 2 weeks, and they become a file. That's all. The FBI is too—the bureau is too busy with counterterrorism, counter-narcotics, and things like that. I understand, but that. By doing this over and over again, how did you do this? And it's much more precise now than the Vince Fawcett case. You might remember that, where I told the searchers he is not, this guy is not
Stephen Fawcett.
In Nevada.
Stephen.
Steve Fawcett. He's in the California Sierra
Nevadas, right?
Right. And I told them over and over again, and that's where he was found.
He was there. I remember your frustration, Ed, when we were talking about that on the air. And they just his crew just didn't want to listen.
Yeah, I was right in direct contact with them too, and we even reconstructed the way he died. He crashed, but now the techniques are down not to just a broad area, but we can get down to within 60 to 100 feet of a target in many cases. Now, when I ran your personal sanctuary location, that's not necessary. I got down to actually a mile and a half. And go and scout out that place, familiarize yourself with it, and if the grid goes down where you happen to be at any given time, get you and your loved ones to that spot, because there's all kinds of, as I said, permutations and factors that go into it. For instance, my personal sanctuary location is about 200 miles from my wife's, because of our personalities, all right?
Yeah.
There's many, many more factors involved here. The unconscious is quite aware of. Only one of the American clients, personal sanctuary clients that I have ever had a sanctuary in Canada. And the reason is simple, because unconscious knows that you'll be kicked out of Canada if you don't have a resident visa, and vice versa.
Sure.
That's just administratively, not to mention logistics.
Well, come to the United States, they'll let anybody in.
From the South.
Anybody in. You know, don't get me started on immigration. I mean, I think immigration has built this country. It's important. It's useful. But it's got to be done under the laws. It's got to be legal and controlled. And I wouldn't build a wall, but, I mean, we need to have something done about this.
I wanted to mention one thing that I forgot to mention earlier, is that one of my workshops is already sold out.
That's the one in Las Vegas.
Yes. And I'm not going to do this again, and I don't want to do it again, but I'm going to give my all this time.
This is pretty intense, though. You're going back and back and forth, right after one after the other, almost.
I am in May, yeah, and I'm doing that, but I'd rather get it out of the way so I can go back to my own personal I have some really neat projects, George. Before I mention that, I just want to mention that the maps and the two DVDs that people can order now through mail, for people who attend the workshops, those are free. They're given away.
Super. Okay.
There.
And it's a one-day workshop, right?
Yeah, it's one day. It's a crash course where introduce you to the skills and the techniques.
Let me give the locations you're going to be at. Folks, you can get it off of Ed's website, but Las Vegas, it's sold out. Seattle, yeah. Orlando, Austin. Seattle is May 21st. Orlando's May 28th. Austin, Texas is July 2nd. And I guess people just go to your website, click, and they fill out the info, and there they are, right?
Right, survivingthekillshot.com. But the that map, we have to spend a lot of time in the workshops and at night, because the day is filled with learning the skills and the techniques. But I stay until 10:30 at night, making sure that people don't leave without answers to their questions. One thing I want to say about unconscious is how powerful this tool is. That one other example I want to give you. Let's say that your sanctuary, personal sanctuary location, based upon your unconscious looking at all these factors about you, was in a particular place. But let's say you had a loved one that contracts in the future or does not know about their pancreatic cancer, all right?
All right.
And unconscious is looking ahead, and it has your best interest, your own best interest at heart, but it knows it can't get this message through to you except sometimes in dreams, but they get all mucked up. And that's about the only time the unconscious has access to you. Because in the daytime, our conscious awareness, our analytical thinking mind, which is always right, right?
It's supposed to be, yeah.
Squelches that. Well, let's say that your location is somewhere in the West, but your loved one has pancreatic cancer and they don't know about it. And let's say the location that you really would, in terms of your personality, love to go to has nothing there, nobody there to either diagnose or treat the pancreatic cancer. Well, what good is it to be alive when the people you love are dead? What kind of quality of life is that? And your unconscious knows
that. Right. You're
right. So it redirects you to an alternative place. And they're all survival locations. They just, your personal location meets your own criteria. As I mentioned, my wife's location is 200 miles away from mine. Guess where we're really located to?
I can imagine.
Yeah. So it's going to be hers. But that's the kind of thing that this takes into consideration, and there are many others. The reason I want to get all this out of the way is because I have a couple of capstone projects for my career, and a couple of them involve kids. But the other two that I'm really looking forward to is two missing planes, and one of them is Amelia Earhart's.
That, and what about MH370? Did you try looking for that? You told me it was in the South China Sea, right?
No, it's off the coast of Myanmar. It's okay. it's to the west of Myanmar, in the Drink.
But you do believe it went down?
Yeah, I recreated the whole thing, the whole event. The pilot wanted to fly to Somalia and hold it hostage. In fact, he trained for that in his Link trainer at home. But what I did was I looked at the location of the aircraft, the location of the pilot and the co-pilot's skull, and I had a photo of one of the passengers, and I looked at the location of his skull, too, and put those together. Then I went into the mines posthumously in the past, because and I looked at the planned destination of the pilot, and I looked at the planned destination of the co-pilot. And this was after recreating the scene, which is very sad, where the co-pilot actually grabbed the controls. At that point, he suffered hypoxia. And
it was too late to save the plane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gosh, that's sad.
So, but I want I really, the capstone of my career, I want to find Amelia Earhart and her plane. I know where her plane is, but I would also like to find...
That she survived the impact, didn't she?
Yes, she, but her co-pilot did not.
He did not, okay.
Yeah, they did not. And the area where the searchers have been looking is close, but not correct.
Was she captured
no.
by the Japanese or anything?
No, there was no one on the atoll where she crashed. She died alone.
How long did she live, do you think, Ed?
Oh, I didn't look, but it didn't look. She was injured, and it didn't look like she'd live more than a few days. In fact, right now there are like mangrove roots and things like that through her body and everything. So, but she, there still may be, again, being able to get down there around 60 feet in many cases would do the trick, because there would be anything metallic she had in her body, you know, would we could find. But the plane we are going to find, and that's the capstone of my career.
That would be fascinating. Do you still have to train yourself for remote viewing, or is it all natural now?
No more training. You reach a point where, in fact, my students, my professional students, can do what I do, but they just, because I've trained them to do that after many hours of instruction. The difference is 30 years of experience. I can cut corners and can recognize patterns far faster and set up problem sets, ensembles. We're solving for an unknown, right? The who, what, when, where, why, and how. And I know how to set those problems up and execute the sessions in a far more facile manner than they do, because they don't have the experience. But they're just as good as me in terms of providing information that we turn into intelligence as rapidly as I do.
These maps that you're talking about that you'll reveal at your events, your training events, are they maps that people should rush to when the time comes, or how much time will they have?
Well, that's what I've been saying for many years. You need to know where to go, because you won't. And by the way, here's something I have not mentioned before that's important. People ask me, what should we be looking for when it's time to run? If you're not already in a sanctuary location, but you know where your sanctuary location is, and you can drive to it. So let's say, for instance, you live in L.A. or Oakland, and the power goes out.
Okay.
And you're stuck in L.A. or Oakland. That's not really a good place to be, and we talk about things like that. But if you know where a sanctuary location is and you have enough gas to get there, then you drive to there rather than, if you want to get out of town, you don't know which way to go. You can't go west. But where do I go? Well, that's what the training, the workshop, and the direction and the guidance gives you. Do this. Find a personal location. Scout it out so you know where to go. Make sure your relatives and loved ones know where you're going, because there probably will not be any communications either. They need to know where to go, and you need to make room for them. That kind of thing. The maps are general survival zones. The personal locations are quite specific, and you have to be trained and understand how to find those.
All right, Ed, we're going to come back and take some phone calls with you. Final hour to go with Dr. Doom, Major Ed Dames.